isn't what we say or think that defines us, but what we do. Jane Austen. This is the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Hey guys, welcome to episode 9 of What We Do. I can't believe next week I'm already putting out the 10th episode. It feels like this just started 5 minutes ago. So thank you everyone for your support so far on the journey. And as usual, make sure you are sharing the podcast and subscribing. This week's guest is one phenomenal woman. What We Do welcomes Ashley Mayo to the show. She's the brand editor at Golf Digest, member of the inaugural golf team at UVA, and a brilliant writer. She's crushing life in New York City and somehow finds a way to balance all of the crazy. Enjoy.
Oh my God, we're live.
Welcome Thank to What you. We Do.
I love the name of the podcast. I love the whole concept.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for being here. So we're here talking to Ashley Mayo about what she does.
Amazing.
Yay. Okay. Can you give just like a, first of all, just like a little basic background, where you're from, what you kind of grew up doing, and how you first got involved in the game of golf?
Yeah, definitely. So I actually grew up, we're in the World Trade Center right now.
Yeah, which is really funny. Well, it's like bizarre for me. Like, hey.
Yeah. Is this your first time here?
This is my first time in like the office section of it. I've done the observatory thing, but this is really interesting and cool.
We were one of the first companies to move into this building when it opened. And I have always considered it such an honor to work here, come here every day. It's my home away from home. And it's beautiful. I love it. I love what it represents. And I love being here every day. So
yeah. When you told me, you know, I was like, what's the address? You're like, oh, One World Trade.
Like the World Trade Center. Like the big one.
I know. Like, I think I can find that. Although I did take the subway halfway into Brooklyn I forgot that it's not like the A doesn't stop at World Trade Center. It's like Fulton or your chamber or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was like at some random station, like J Street.
It's happened to all of us. Welcome to New York.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I used to be a trained New Yorker and now I'm just like failing.
That's okay.
But so, anyway, yes. Yeah.
So I actually grew up here in New York City.
Yes. Okay.
Just just like a couple miles away from here, this spot in Greenwich Village. And born and raised in the city. So we didn't really play golf growing up. I say we because I have an identical twin sister.
Yes.
And both of us played golf at UVA. So
I didn't realize you played at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, we
That's
both played
so
for UVA.
That's so cool. That's
we
awesome.
Actually started the women's golf team at the University of Virginia. So we were on the first women's golf team there.
How does one start a women's golf team?
Well, so we didn't start it, but we were on the first women's golf team.
Oh, okay. I was like, wow.
We helped. We were part of the seven girls.
The inaugural team.
Inaugural team, yeah. And especially at a university like UVA, it's so cool to start something new because it's a school that's so steeped in tradition. You know, it's Thomas Jefferson School and, you know, it just every little corner has tradition steeped in it.
Yeah.
So, and now they're back-to-back ACC champs and I could not be more proud to be an alumni, especially part of that team. But backtracking, my sister and I were born and raised in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. Manhattan is not conducive to golfers.
What?
It's not the easiest place to play golf. Not a lot of golf courses here, but we did vacation in Miami the summer before ninth grade. So we're Cuban. My mom is Cuban, and we have a lot of relatives in Miami because that is Cuban Central. Yeah. And we just kind of got a golf lesson. My mom was always into pushing us into learning a little bit of everything. We have our pilot's license. You know, it's just kind of random.
That. Yeah. So do you pilot on the weekends?
No.
Or how does that work?
The last time I flew was as a senior in college. So it's been a little while.
It's been a while. Yeah.
My mom just kind of loved getting us involved with a variety of things. She wanted to make sure that we had all the things that she didn't have. You know, she grew up with foster families. She came from Cuba alone and she didn't have anything in the States. So she's that typical Cuban mom who wants us in turn to have everything.
Yeah.
And so we just randomly got a golf lesson and we kind of hated it, to be honest. It was right after Tiger won the Masters for the first time. It was in 1998 when we got our first lesson. And we were 13 and, you know, it was just kind of that kind of old sport, really slow. And we were swimmers, skiers, you know, did ballet, like everything social and golf was then so not those things. But we were pretty good. Mm-hmm. And we came back to Manhattan for high school, went back to Miami the summer after high school, and again, started playing again, and then really loved it. Ended up moving down there for golf.
For golf?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
For a number of reasons, but mostly because we loved golf. And mm-hmm. so 10th, 11th, 12th grade, we finished high school in Miami and played like every day. Every day. We were so addicted. And the fact that we had each other, I think, really helped.
Yeah. That's really important.
Yeah. I think especially if you're a girl, you know, that social aspect or kind of practicing with a buddy and making it more interactive is really important. Whereas guys can just pound range balls for hours and be totally happy.
Very weird.
It's very strange. So we got good enough to play at UVA. And then we both played all 4 years there. She and I both went to college thinking that we wanted to be doctors. And she is a doctor now.
Oh, wow. What kind of doctor is
she? She's a dermatologist.
Oh, wow.
But about halfway through college, I decided that I didn't want to be a doctor and that I wanted to be a writer. As you can imagine, calling my Cuban mom, who thought, oh, my God, she's going to have her twin girls both be doctors. This is the American dream.
Oh, I totally relate to you because my parents are Russian immigrants. So
there you go.
You're, like, speaking my language. Yeah. My dad's a surgeon, so here we go.
Okay. call her one day and be like, Mom, you know, I know I'm going to this very expensive school. And I know you thought that I wanted to be a doctor, but I actually want to be a writer. That didn't go over so well, but she loves what I do now.
Yeah.
And she absolutely, and it was fine. But yeah, I took this one course at UVA called Media Studies. And it just made me realize how much I enjoyed or I could enjoy going to class or I could enjoy doing my homework. Whereas for all my pre-med courses, I didn't really enjoy them. I did them and I did okay. Like I did well in those classes, but I didn't really love doing it. And I saw how much my twin sister loved doing what she did. And when I found that for me, I found it in media studies. So that's what led me to media.
Right. So as you're getting out of college, were you already applying for jobs at Golf Digest? Or what was kind of like your first leap from that academic space to the professional world?
I applied for an internship at Golf Digest when I was a junior in college. So for the summer between my junior and senior year. Mm-hmm. And I knew that I missed the deadline by like months. The deadline for the summer internship was in November, which these are Condé Nast deadlines.
Yeah.
And I think I sent my resume in like February because I was like, who's thinking about the summer, the November before? You know, that's crazy.
No, that's really ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like somebody that's really excited about an internship.
I know. So I sent my resume anyway, and I said, screw the deadline. I'm going to send this. And just cross my fingers. And so I did hear back from actually Alan Pittman, who's still the managing editor here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he was like, you know, we received your resume and we really love everything that you're doing. Obviously, like on paper, I was on the golf team and then in all these media outlets. So
perfect.
Yeah. It was like this perfect marriage for Golf Digest. Mm-hmm. And he said, unfortunately, though, our hands are tied and we can't hire you because of this deadline. And so, but we'll keep your resume on file. I was like, okay, it's the whole it's not you, it's me speech, whatever. I got another internship at actually ABC News in Miami, which
that was
really cool. But when I started my senior year of college, a position opened up at Digest and he called me. And I was like, oh, actually the position opened up at Golf for Women magazine, which was a Golf Digest magazine. But at the time it was Golf for Women, which is no longer, but was a great magazine. And they called me, they were like, this position opened up, are you interested? I said, actually, I just started my senior year of college and they thought that I had graduated. And I said, but if I take 18 credits this summer, I could graduate early. And they were like, okay, you know, come up to New York, we'll interview you. And if we like you, great. Drove up and interviewed. 2 weeks later, got the job. And they waited for me for 3.5 months. And so I took 18 credits that last semester, drove up January and started January 29th, 2007. So I'm coming in on 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was my first job out of college. Got very lucky
with
timing.
With Golf for
Women? With Golf for Women.
Okay.
Which was a bi-monthly Golf Digest product. And I loved it. You know, for a year and a half, I was at Golf for Women until it folded. The recession did very bad things for a lot of magazines.
Yeah.
And then right after it folded, Golf Digest kind of saved a few people. And I was one of those lucky people that then transitioned over to the mothership.
Of Golf Digest.
Of Golf Digest, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was interesting. I think a lot of it was timing. You know, a lot of us get lucky with that. But also the fact that I had all my eggs in a row and didn't care about that deadline, got in touch with the right people regardless, and then just kind of showed initiative. You know, I told them up front I hadn't graduated, but would love to get the job mm-hmm. if they were willing to wait. And they were. So,
okay. So you mentioned that at the time the recession really affected magazines. And, you know, we're still living in this world where magazines are folding left and right. So how is Golf Digest staying relevant in today's world as kind of a traditional publication?
Yeah, we're more and more trying to think of ourselves as more of a mom and pop shop, just kind of a startup. We want to be where the eyeballs are. We don't want to change anyone's reading habits. We don't want to tell anyone that, you know, print is the only way because it's so not. And, yeah. and we realize that modern consumption of media has changed and we want to be where they are. So we're Golf Digest very much considers social first, social only content as integral to the brand. And no longer is that kind of content secondary or an afterthought. It's very much in the beginning of the conversation and many times now drives the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I feel like before, so I actually started all of the social media accounts at Golf Digest.
And you personally were like Instagram.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Login name. Wow.
Yes, absolutely. Facebook page, Twitter account, Instagram account, Snapchat. Like
and then you ran them.
Yes. Yeah. So for 4.5, 5 years, I ran them by myself just as a side project. I was an equipment editor and a hot list judge and just kind of did this on the side. I also went back to school at Columbia part-time mm-hmm. to get my master's in digital journalism for that very reason that I saw these kind of digital platforms pop up maybe a few years after I started at Digest and Golf for Women. And I was like, no one around here is going to know really how to adapt to this as quickly or as smartly as a Columbia professor or Columbia students would. So, you know, why not surround myself with people who want to learn this as much as I do? And mm-hmm. so I went back to school part-time and learned all that. And I took the very first social media class at Columbia Journalism School.
Wow.
And
you're a big one for firsts.
I know.
I like that.
But I feel like we all can be. I feel like I just, without really knowing, I identified kind of a hole in Golf Digest, like, or a space that needed to be filled. And at that time, it was social media and kind of digital platforms. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, we totally need to fill this because they're not going anywhere. I feel like in the beginning, especially, people trivialize these platforms.
Yeah. Did you get some pushback from people that worked here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And to this day, sometimes I feel like I have to fight a little harder than maybe I should, but it's so much better. Like, I feel like we are all, as a brand, all in. We totally get the importance of these platforms and they're not secondary at all. But definitely in the beginning when we had these Twitter training sessions and Instagram, I mean, I felt like people, especially these older guys who had been there for so many years, here comes this like young girl telling them what to do. And it was just like, wait, who are you? Like, why are you diluting my brand?
No, I'm bringing in more eyeballs
exactly,
to your brand.
Exactly. So the fact that we were kind of one of the first golf media brands to take that seriously, I think now everyone realizes how important that is because when you're playing catch up in the social media game, it's just tiring and exhausting. So that was fun. To this day, I find social media a lot of fun. And I think that's definitely one of the ways that Golf Digest has kind of kept up and still remained relevant in today's age is that our content is being distributed where people are consuming content. So I think that's very important. And we realize that some people only follow us on Instagram or only consume our YouTube videos. So we want to make sure that that's our best foot forward.
So would you say that your position right now is like your dream job, or are you constantly working towards that next big goal?
I would say both. I have, since January 29th, 2007, I have considered Golf Digest and Golf for Women my dream job. Just my current job is my dream job.
This is your dream job now, but
yes.
You're working towards the future for...
Yeah.
For what?
Well, you know, I feel like stage one of my career mm-hmm. was very much becoming comfortable with being in the workplace and being in a male-dominated industry and, you know, gaining that confidence of, like, my voice matters and my opinion matters and you know, I don't really care if you think it doesn't, because it does.
Good.
Yeah. And so that was stage one. And stage two, I feel like, is taking that confidence and helping Golf Digest then move into new places. You mentioned before that there have been a lot of firsts in my life, and yeah. I kind of love forging kind of new paths. And I think the lamest excuse for doing something is because it's been done before, or, oh, this is how it's been done, so we're going to keep on doing it this way. I love doing things because it makes sense. And so that's why I started our social media accounts and kind of tapping into new revenue streams there. And so I think in stage two, I'll continue to kind of lead Golf Digest, this brand that I've loved for so many years. Like, I loved it in college. I loved it in high school. Mm-hmm. And kind of lead this brand to new paths, in new directions, yeah. but directions that make sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, in the Golf Digest sense, that's my stage two, but also then in my personal yeah. life, in the professional sense, but just like my own person, I really want to kind of work with other companies too. And, you know, in a much smaller way. Golf Digest will always be my number one place to work and my dream job, but like, why not help then these other brands also find their footing? Because I feel like there's a big void in golf, especially. I don't know if this is the case in other industries as well, but I'm kind of thinking it might be. Whereas social media is so kind of perplexing, and
yeah.
they don't get it. Like, it's just, I think if I sat here and told you that I knew everything about it, then you should just tell me to leave the room. And you never want to talk to me ever again.
I would definitely take your word for it because I'm over here like trying to keep up.
Yeah. So. No, I think that's the beauty of it, is no one knows everything about it. And if anyone
and
says
changing.
That they do, it's always changing.
Yeah. yeah.
But there are definitely best practices and things to know to help you in putting together a strategy or a plan. And I think a lot of brands and people don't quite get that yet. So mm-hmm. I would love to help, because any chance that I get to kind of talk about golf or mm-hmm. kind of further the game or kind of introduce the game to other people, then, I mean, that gets me fired up.
Ever wonder where you can get one of those awesome custom Snapchat geofilters? Or maybe you're thinking about starting your own podcast or lifestyle brand, but you don't know how to go about getting your logos and branding set up. Socialyte has you covered. Started by fierce female entrepreneur Alexa Rogers, Socialyte Design creates custom Snapchat geofilters, custom printables, logos, and can help make your wedding, bachelorette, birthday, or any event even more special. Lucky for you, she's offering What We Do listeners an awesome deal. Just use code WHATWEDO at sociallightdesign.etsy.com, and all first-time clients will receive 10% off your first order. That's coupon code WHATWEDO at social, S-O-C-I-A-L, light, L-I-G-H-T, design.etsy.com. And you can check them out at Socialyte Design on Instagram. Now back to the show. When we're talking about getting more people into the golf space, what is your biggest advice to women that are, I'm sure you have plenty of friends that like have never picked up a golf club and just could never even imagine themselves going out and starting because it's expensive, it takes a lot of time, or at least they perceive it to be so. So what is your advice to those women that might not ever have considered picking up golf before?
You know, it's so interesting that you asked that, because a friend of mine, who's actually a friend by way of a guy friend, so she is his girlfriend now, mm-hmm. and he is a golfer friend. So, you know, we play and we get drinks, and then here comes this girlfriend of his, and she surprised him for Christmas, just this past Christmas, by getting golf lessons for like 6 weeks before that. Like, every week she would go and get a golf lesson. So then they went to California for the new year, played golf, and he's like totally stoked, and she's now getting into golf. So obviously she was telling me about all this along the way, mm-hmm. and her impression of golf was so different than the actual experience, a golf experience that she had, because she thought the clothes were far cuter than she ever imagined. She was like, oh my God, these are amazing. Like, I get to wear Lululemon skirts on the golf course and like these awesome, I gave her a foray, a tank top. Yeah, a sleeveless polo. And she was like, this is amazing. They're so much more comfortable, so much more flattering than I ever could have imagined. She also thought that her golf teacher is great. She gets lessons here in Manhattan at an indoor studio. And she's a triathlete. She's an Ironman. Like, she's ripped.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And she still thinks that golf is like challenging, but in a great way. Mm-hmm. She doesn't think it's slow or boring at all. Mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of times golf suffers from these perceptions that are really not true. They can be true, but I feel like they don't have to be true. And the three barriers that I see golf facing more than anything are that it's too expensive, takes too much time, and it's too difficult. And I think that all three of those things don't necessarily have to be the case, especially if you play par three courses or, you know, just go to the range for 30 minutes. That's playing golf. And then, you know, buy cute clothes. And I think if I were talking to a girl or a woman who just wanted to start playing, I would say, first of all, it's going to be one of the more frustrating sports that you'll ever encounter.
What? And that's,
yeah.
No.
Yeah, totally. But that's okay. That's part of the beauty of it. But that no one cares. I feel like women tend to care so much or think that everyone's watching them on the course, whereas no one's watching. Like, it's okay for you to duff that shot, just move on to the next one. And it's okay for you to slice it into the woods. Like, we all do it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not the end of the world. As long as you have a good attitude and keep up the pace, you know, I don't think you should ever putt out for 12. Pick up the ball.
Yeah.
Let's move on. throw it by the green.
Yeah.
Then I think, you know, if you have that in mind, that like just to calm down and no one's like looking as intently as you think they're looking, or they don't really care at all, mm-hmm. then the other things start falling in place. I think that's the biggest kind of barrier for women, is that there's so much pressure on them to play well when there really isn't.
Yeah. And it also opens up, like for me personally, the business opportunities that I've gotten playing golf have been incredible.
Yeah. For you, it must be, I mean, because it seems like you work in so many different areas, right?
Yeah, but golf kind of, I find it everywhere. It's like there's always somebody that I can powwow with about golf, and just like gets you to be a part of that conversation, because if a bunch of guys are going out to discuss some business deal on the golf course, well, if you can play golf, you can be a part of that conversation.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. For me, it's obviously my job.
Yeah. It was a little different for you.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's plenty of conversations that I never would have been a part of had I not been able to actually play.
Yeah. And I think for a female to be able to kind of hang on the course.
You don't have to have a two handicap.
Absolutely not.
A la Ashley Mayo.
No, absolutely not. You don't at all. You just have to be able to be like comfortable on a course.
Yeah.
I feel like that might be harder for some women than others, but it's really no different from being comfortable anywhere else. Just be comfortable out there, and a mishit is totally fine, and people will remember your attitude well more than any score that you put up on the board.
How do you feel about the LPGA dress code?
Oh, gosh. When I saw that, I actually was the one, I wrote about it. I was the first one, because a player forwarded me the email that they got sent, and I was like, why word it in this way, first of all, which was it seemed so archaic and old, the words that they used. But then why do this in the middle of the season? Like, why not, first of all, just wait until the end of the season when new rules and regulations always get updated? But why the emergency rush to implement this new set of rules all of a sudden? I couldn't quite grasp it. And I even looked at countless images on Getty, because, you know, the LPGA Tour, very few of the rounds are like aired live, which is so highly unfortunate. But last year when this news broke, I looked at Getty Images on the LPGA Tour, and I could barely find anything that was even remotely offensive. So I was just kind of perplexed as to why they felt the need to make this rush change. And then also the fact that, you know, the LPGA Tour is a great product, but more people need to know that. And I think when you implement these rules, you're kind of taking a step back in the perception of what your product is.
Yeah, on the one hand, we're celebrating women. And on the other hand, we're going to come down really hard and tell you what to do and where.
Exactly. And, oh, we know that you guys are athletes, but now you guys really can't dress like them. So, yeah. Okay.
Like for Michelle, we to wear a racer back.
Yeah.
Like a tennis player can wear that.
What, totally.
And they're doing the exact same amount of, I mean, it's a little different. You're not running back and forth, but she needs that range of motion just as much as a tennis player does.
Absolutely. And the fact that they're offended by the fact that you can see the shorts underneath the skirt, I mean, come on.
I
don't understand how you could be offended by that.
I don't know. I know it's a podcast, but like I'm making a face right now. It's just like, I cannot with that.
No.
Okay. So who's your favorite female golfer on tour right now?
Well, you just mentioned her name.
Oh, Michelle. Hey, girl. And she's a friend. She can be my friend too now.
I love Michelle.
I love her blonde hair right now.
Pink now.
Oh, is it pink?
It's pink now. Her hair color changes on a weekly basis.
I love her.
Yeah, she just, I wish I had a little more Michelle Wee in me because I want to change my hair color like on a weekly basis. I want to cut it to a bob. I want to let it grow out really long. Like she's also like really into art and has that kind of goth in her, the like dark side. And but at the same time, she's bubbly and just totally fun. And yeah, I love what she does both on the course and off. I think she's very multifaceted and well-rounded. She doesn't only talk about golf. She's really into fashion and food and travel. And then how she looks on the course. I think she's also the most stylish female golfer out there. I think if you're looking for tips or inspiration, she's definitely should be your number one resource because she kind of morphs or kind of changes golf clothes into more urban, like streetwear in a way.
So looking back on your career thus far, do you have like a singular golf moment that you're like, oh my God, I can't believe I just witnessed that. Like this is history forever.
Well, you know, it's a very interesting question. Last year, I got to play a few holes with Snoop Dogg. Which was amazing.
What? Is he
so
good?
On a more fun level, that was amazing and so cool. He's a beginner. So he's not
he's
a
just
good
there
golfer.
For the greenery, yes, should we say?
Yes. He was told he couldn't smoke on the course. Which was
yeah, I don't think that he cares.
So playing with him was so cool because you could see that he was so interested in learning how to play golf and he's so stoked about the game and he considers himself an athlete. So, you know, he has no qualms about learning and picking it up quickly. But he said a lot of his industry friends, like the music industry and business or entertainment industry, they love golf. And he's felt like he's missed out, like he has serious FOMO. And so he is learning how to play golf. And I just loved that I got to play a few holes with him. That was amazing. But on a more professional level, we just spent some time with Tiger.
Saw that on your Twitter.
For his current cover.
Very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So he's on the cover of Golf Digest right now. Mm-hmm. It's our February 2018 cover. And we spent an hour with him at Medalist at the end of last year. And it was the first time that we, as Golf Digest, spent any amount of time with him one-on-one for like more than 5 years. It's been a long, or maybe even longer. And it's been a long time. And, you know, the fact that the opportunity came up and I got to spend time with, that was the first time that I ever spent like one-on-one time with him. Mm-hmm. It was awesome because I so looked up to him as I was spending those hours on the range as a high school golfer and even in college. And what he did on the golf course was just so amazing to witness. I kind of wish that I witnessed that more with my professional hat on and like that I was working in those heydays. But the fact that, you know, he was kind of really the primary inspiration when I was like learning how to play. I learned how to play with my sister and also my dad. So that was definitely a more personal motivation and inspiration, but Tiger was like made it cool.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, working my way into the small group of people here at Digest who gets to go to those kind of bigger shoots was definitely a highlight. And being one of the people there who kind of captured content that we then used later was really cool.
Is there any advice that you have to young women that are maybe in college or in high school and they want to be a writer? And like, I think that that's probably a really hard dream to have right now, because it's something that's like, it's hard to make money as a writer unless you get like a really great job like you have, or if you want to be a novelist, or whatever it is. So what is your advice to a young girl that dreams of being in this creative field and following in that whole path?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I love a lot about working here is I work not only at Golf Digest, but at Condé Nast. Mm-hmm. And so I get to speak to a lot of college girls who want to work in media, not necessarily golf. Actually, for the most part, they're not
golf.
Interested in
no.
golf, which is unfortunate.
we're working on it.
Yes, we're working on it. But they ask me about media. And one thing that I always say is reach out to people, you know, just reach out and give them something that is worth their while. You know, I think there's nothing wrong with reaching out to your favorite writer and just emailing them. Everyone's emails are so public now.
Yeah.
Just email them. Ask them to get a cup of coffee, you know, if you live in the same city, or talk on the phone for 30 minutes or whatever. And you'd be surprised as to how many of those people that you admire say, yeah, totally, because we're all humans, you know, and we all want to help and give back. And we might not write back to you after the first email, but if you keep reaching out, if you keep following up, then we will. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't even think to do that. They just kind of see this person that they want to be one day and they hold them up on this pedestal, but you can actually talk to that person and you totally should. And I think once you do, you would realize either that, yeah, you really want to follow in their footsteps, or maybe it's not for you. I think that's almost one of the most kind of important and valuable ways to learn that lesson. Because if you then walk away from that meeting or that talk feeling kind of like, oh, kind of like that saying, never meet your heroes. Like, oh, that wasn't as I, you know, had hoped it would play out, or she's not as enthusiastic as I thought she would be, or whatever, then maybe that's a sign that, you know, the grass might not be greener in that area. So maybe that's your shifting point and you can turn.
And it's okay to change your dream.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's more than okay. So yeah, reaching out to people, I think, is number one, and just kind of putting your name out there and not bugging people, because I don't think you can ever do that, but just reaching out and, you know, contacting those folks that you maybe want to become one day. But then also constantly writing. I mean, in today's age, when everyone can have a blog, why not have your own?
Yeah.
Or your podcast or whatever, and just master your own craft. And if you really love it and you really love to do it, then it would be no problem for you to do that for no payment and just out of love and kind of out of your own goodwill, and just do that for a year and see where it takes you. You know, do it on the side. We all have nights and weekends, and all we need is a laptop and a URL.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, even for me, like, starting this podcast has kind of been like a, all right, you just got to dive in and
do it.
And the people that I've gotten to talk to, the places that it's taken me already, and it's only been a few months.
Yeah.
Is crazy. So if you just like kind of take that leap of faith and just do it.
Yeah.
Then, you know, great things can happen.
Totally. Yeah.
So I have one more question for you, which is your What We Do moment.
Yeah.
Our podcast is called What We Do. And I always like to ask my guests if there is a moment in your life, good, bad, anything that truly defines you and the path that you're taking, and that you're either look back on with pride, or you're just really glad that that's something that you did.
Yeah. No, I think there's a very clear What We Do moment for me. It wasn't a singular moment, but it was a phase. And I think being in the front line of social media is great. And I love the strategy and thinking about how it could evolve and how it could better a brand. But it also has its cons.
Let's not say down, let's say cons.
It has its cons. And one of those being that it's this weird thing where people on social media, behind the safe haven of their little screen and typing on their little keyboard, they feel kind of invincible and they become flat out rude and just totally mean and terrible versions of what I think is a better version of themselves. But in that moment on social media, they can be just terrible. And I never really encountered that in the beginning, but maybe a couple of years ago, it started popping up. And in the beginning, I would feel like totally like it was a personal attack, and started questioning my worth and questioning my place in the golf industry, in the professional industry, just on earth.
Yeah, and it really hurts you.
It hurts.
It's amazing how much those words can hurt.
It is, yeah. And I never thought of myself. I never got bullied growing up and never really was picked on, which I feel so grateful for. So this was the first time, and it really did hurt. And I think my What We Do moment was when I decided that it would no longer hurt and that, you know, those words are coming from very weak people who clearly have some other issues that they need to tend to. And that they're just kind of throwing it in my direction. And a lot of times I would look at these people's timelines and I would realize that they're just negative about everything.
Yeah.
And it's not a personal attack at all. And they don't know me.
Yeah.
So I think after I learned that those words could just like totally bounce right off me and never penetrate my feelings or who I am, that was definitely empowering and amazing, because to this day, sometimes my fiance will look at some comments that are just totally rude and just awful, and he'll get hurt. And I said, Jeff, you got to stop reading those, because there comes a moment when we all can be stronger than that and lift above that. And I think when I started doing that, it totally then, that confidence that I built up before that started happening came back, and I started becoming a little more sure about myself and my place in this industry and in this kind of, like I said, in this world. And it was totally freeing, and it let me move on to bigger and better things. And so, yeah, I think everyone encounters that in some degree or another. And I think ultimately, if you're authentic and if you know that what you're doing is good, and if it serves you, then it probably serves other people. And that's, I think, making other people happy and serving other people is like the best thing that I could do. So if I'm doing that, then I'm well on my way.
Thanks for listening. Tune in every Tuesday for the latest episode of the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Follow at Kira Kazantsev on all social for podcast updates, or go to whatwedo.live or whatwedopodcast.com for our blog, photos, bonus content, and info. Questions? Email us at info@whatwedo.live. See you next week. What We Do by Kira Kazantsev is mixed and mastered by Resonate Recordings. Interested in starting your own podcast? As a What We Do listener, you can go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free. Just let them know we sent you. If you have a podcast or are considering starting one, I can't recommend them enough. They are amazing audio engineers that understand podcasting like no one else. Go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free today.